Suncast is proudly supported by Trina Solar.
These solar structures are really critical to the efficient operation of solar plants to ensure that we're making energy at the lowest cost possible.
Right.
And these structures are mainly made out of steel. What's fantastic about steel structures is that we can manufacture them here in the United States at the exact same price point that they would normally have been manufactured from an Asian source historically.
Yep.
There's a huge drive to take all of this manufacturing capacity that existed primarily in Asia and bring it into the United States. And so there are now manufacturing centers throughout the U.S. to make the structural steel that is going into the solar power plants that are being built in the U.S. today. And this is creating jobs and creating opportunities in the communities where these solar projects are being built.
Hey there, solar warriors. I'm Nico Johnson, and this is Suncast. Each week, I pull back the veil on the life and business insights of clean tech entrepreneurs building the most noble and impactful companies of our time. I hope what you learn from this conversation is a catalyst for your own growth. So thanks for tuning in and welcome to our tribe. Our job is to bring you thought leaders on the front lines of the clean energy transition. One such thought leader is Mr. Eric Frazier, the Vice President of Sales for FTC Solar. Eric, it's good to see you.
Nico, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and thank you as well for supporting this kind
Absolutely.
Of education for our community and for those here in our live audience.
It's a real pleasure to be a sponsor of this event.
The solar industry is transforming in many ways. You and I have been in this industry for
Absolutely.
A long time, and we've watched trackers go from the most expensive to the most competitive.
Yeah.
We've watched it go from 1P to 2 in portrait and back to 1. We've watched the whole fluctuation of basically, are modules really expensive? We'll go with fixed tilt.
Yeah.
Are modules more cost competitive? We'll go with trackers again.
Yeah.
And now with the tailwind of the Inflation Reduction
yeah.
Act, we finally see the ability to reshore our manufacturing. As someone who's been working specifically in the solar structure side of the business, what stands out to you as some of the key features that are driving the growth of the solar industry here in the United States right now, and then B, the reshoring of manufacturing and in particular the solar structure sector?
Yeah, thank you for that question. It's a really important trend that's emerging in the solar space right now, which is domestication of manufacturing of the structures that we put these solar panels on. And for your audience that may not know, these solar structures are really critical to the efficient operation of solar plants to ensure that we're making energy at the lowest cost possible.
Right.
And these structures are mainly made out of steel.
Yeah.
And what's fantastic about steel structures is that today, given the incentives that are available through the Inflation Reduction Act, we can manufacture them here in the United States at the exact same price point that they would normally have been manufactured from an Asian source historically.
Yep.
So there's a huge drive to take all of this manufacturing capacity that existed primarily in Asia and bring it into the United States. And so there are now manufacturing centers throughout the U.S. to make the structural steel that is going into the solar power plants that are being built in the U.S. today. And this is creating jobs
yep.
and creating opportunities in the communities where these solar projects are being built.
And for FTC, roughly what percentage of the overall structure are you able to bring back to domestic
yeah.
manufacturing?
Yeah, right now we're making at least 50% of
mm-hmm.
the overall single-axis tracker superstructure right here in the U.S.
Yeah.
We can grow that all the way up to 80, 85% and even more
yeah.
when the incentive grows, when
yeah.
the opportunity grows to provide the value to that community, we can grow it even more.
One of the key incentives in the IRA that benefits domestic manufacturing, particularly for the steel sector, is this 45X. And it is, like all legislation, in perpetual limbo, waiting on sort of confirmation of what is the regulation
yeah.
going to provide. Do you have a sense of what the guidance is going to look like
yeah.
and the timing on that? And what does that benefit really materially do for you as a structure provider?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really important question that a lot of folks are dealing with right now. Where is the guidance? Based on the guidance today, where is it going to settle? What's the final terms going to look like, part of 45X? And so we take a little bit of a multifaceted approach to that. We are moving forward as an organization and domesticating our manufacturing as much as we possibly can.
Yeah.
And we're working with some of our partners who are willing to pay for that.
Okay.
And so we have good partners who are more risk tolerant and believe the 45X is going to land in one direction, and we're here as a partner to support them.
Mm-hmm.
We have others who are taking a little bit more risk averse approach, and we are providing structural steel to them that meets their unique needs. So as a manufacturer, we can pivot depending on what our partner needs to be able to provide them the type of steel that is right for them and their risk tolerance.
And what's the type of benefit that 45X actually materially provides to the overarching cost stack?
Yeah, so that is going to provide basically an incentive for that production as far as a tax credit.
Okay. And it's a tax credit. Do we know, do we have guidance yet on how much of a tax credit it's going to
be? Yes, we have some general understanding of where that's going to land. How that's going to play out in reality, though, is not final.
Right.
And so we're still with our regulatory counsel trying to figure out how to model that financially as an organization.
So are developers then trying to model it themselves, or do they leave it up to the tracker industry to basically build it into the pricing that they're for pricing?
Yeah, so obviously under the IRA, there are a variety of different incentives, some for the developer and some for the manufacturer, right? So we own the manufacturing incentives and management of the risk associated with those, just like as the developer owns some of the incentives that they're going to have access to.
If you're in the commercial, industrial, or community solar PV sectors, well, you know that the projects you're developing require much more than just module procurement consideration. Increasingly, developers contend with trackers and energy storage among the myriad system components to consider. Savvy developers and EPCs are turning to Trina Solar's C&I solutions to deliver installations easier, faster, and more efficiently by bundling these essential services and products. Just another reason Trina Solar is your trusted partner for total solar solutions. Visit mysuncast.com/Trina to see how Trina Solar's C&I solutions can save you money and headache today. Hey, Solar Warrior, I want to thank you for tuning in. In honor of 700 episodes of Suncast, my team and I have packaged this little ebook called 10 Uncommon Books That Influenced the Leaders of the Climate Tech Revolution. If you'd like to get your hands on it, and as well, say thank you for us putting together 700 episodes of this show for you, head to suncastoffer.com. It's easy. Give me your email. I'll send you over the ebook. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go to suncastoffer.com. Now back to the show. You mentioned you could potentially sort of reshore up to or domesticate up to 80, 85%. What's the additional 15, 20% that is really not possible to reshore at this point?
Yeah, there are a few components of high complexity that we don't really have a manufacturing base in the United States for right now, or a base at the scale or at the economics that the industry needs. Just a couple of examples. One is the control systems.
Okay.
The control systems we make internationally right now, we have plans in the future to domesticate those. However, there's a 4-5x increase in cost associated with that item to produce it in the U.S. So that's one item. Another one is our wind stability system. Any single access tracker is really dependent on being able to handle extreme weather events.
Yeah.
Our system is no exception. And so we have a very unique dampening system to manage high and extreme winds on project sites. And that doesn't have the infrastructure to be manufactured in the U.S. quite yet, although we're working on that one as well.
Yeah. You mentioned things like wind. It makes me think about extreme weather and then some of the assets that perhaps have to deal with underperformance. Is there what element of sort of contributory value does the structure provider have in tackling underperformance in an asset?
Oh man, great question, because we're not just a provider of steel. We're also a provider of the control systems that operate these single access trackers on these project sites. And the control systems have a couple of important roles to play, both related to managing extreme events as well as managing system underperformance. You mentioned both of those. So on the extreme wind event side, one thing that we're working on is integration with third-party weather services to give us real-time data about what's coming so that we can reposition the system accordingly to ensure that it's protected against these wind events and protected in such a way that gives the insurance providers comfort to provide premiums to these projects at a lower rate. So it's deep integration and collaboration with not only the owner, the contractor, and the insurance company
yep.
to ensure we have a system that's right for the type of weather events that are going to exist at that project. Because a Texas weather event will be different potentially than a weather event in New England
right.
versus the Northwest.
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
Each region will have a different type of weather, extreme weather management system that we're going to deploy. When it comes to ensuring these systems are performing at their full level, the sort of asset underperformance, which is a challenge sort of the entire industry faces. We also have a role to play there through advanced software to ensure that we don't really, number one, have any downtime.
Yep.
When there is downtime, we get automated notifications of something going wrong so that we can go fix it, hopefully virtually through a software fix. But also if we need to send crews out to the site, that's an option as well.
Yep.
But if we know this in real time, we can limit that downtime as much as possible. Another couple items that I think play into this, and there is a role of AI, even in steel structural manufacturers,
is that right?
to improve the QC of our manufacturing process and the installation process in the field to ensure that that time is condensed as much as possible and we get it right the first time, which is really important. And we have software and AI that can do just that. We can work with our contractor partners to ensure the system is being built to specification and will be right as soon as possible.
Yeah. Well, we've been in the industry since when we had big, flat, postage stamp perfect terrain.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for most developers, we simply don't have all of the terrain available that we used to have. And it is forcing us into a constrained environment where I imagine that it also requires you as a structure provider to react with innovation. How are you supporting your developer partners where you get into odd-shaped properties and uneven terrain?
Yeah, this is certainly another trend that is emerging in this space, which is moving from these nice flat projects to more complex ones. Complexity is really part of our future in solar. We've moved away from some of these easier sites, and we need to support additional complexity through simpler solutions that can handle these challenges. And so you need technologies that can conform to the terrain really well, that might actually have shorter overall tracker tables. They might have breakages in those tracker tables so that they can actually more naturally conform to the undulations. And this is an improvement overall because this allows us to do less earth movement on project sites. And earth movement creates risk for the owner and it creates risk for the community.
And of course, cost
element as well. And I think the community aspect of one is really important because a lot of landowners are leasing their land for a period of time and they want at the end of that solar project's life to have a nice, sustainable piece of land back at the end of it. And when we move less dirt, we enable the ability for that land post-solar project to transition to something else. Maybe it's to agriculture, or maybe it's to something else the landowner has in mind, which brings up another really important attribute of future solar projects that we're beginning to see emerge right now, which is multiple revenue streams for a single piece of project. So a landowner might lease their land for wind or for solar, and that's a great revenue stream. But for solar, usually you're not able to have multiple revenue streams on that same piece of land like you might be able to with wind. So what we're seeing emerging right now is technology that can not only conform to the land, but that can enable other items like agrivoltaics to take place on that piece of property as well. So you can now conduct agricultural operations and energy production on the same piece of land, creating multiple revenue streams for that landowner.
I love it. You were getting into an area that I was thinking about as I was beginning to contemplate our job as we think through combating what is referred to commonly as NIMBYism, right? And I've been in the solar industry for almost 20 years. I consider solar to be community development. What, as someone else who's been in the industry for a while, how do you approach communities or even the conversation around NIMBYism with regards to how solar really truly is community development, not a community impediment?
Yeah, absolutely. I certainly see it as community development as well. But many communities are new to solar still, right? I mean, so, and they know the legacy of those communities is in agriculture, it's in mining, it's in ranching, not in energy production.
Right.
And so they don't really know yet what solar is all about. And sometimes they have some risks on some things that are uncertain. And as solar continues to grow, we're seeing these communities see the value of the development of those communities through sustainable energy production through solar energy, which is a really great thing to see. But this is a slow process.
Yeah.
And will take time for more communities to open themselves up to the jobs, to the opportunities that are created through siting energy facilities in their communities.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, as we build more projects, we need more O&M technicians. As we build more factories, we need more folks working in those factories. This is the greatest, it's the greatest transformation and revival of our, of the Rust Belt and in many other manufacturing communities in our lifetime.
Absolutely. It really is one of the most positive success stories in our economy today, because the jobs that are being created by siting these energy facilities throughout this country is creating jobs that are not only positive for the community, but are also higher paying jobs.
Yeah.
These are better employed workers in many cases that we need. And we are hungry for new workers who are skilled in these trades and this technology, because we are growing fast and we need good people to support this continued growth.
We're grateful for companies like FTC that are manufacturing here domestically and harvesting all of the great talent coming out of schools like UNC to add to the growing workforce that you have here in North America and soon around the world.
That's right.
Eric Frazier is the Vice President of Sales for FTC Solar. Thank you for joining us here at the Suncast Media Zone.
Thanks so much. It's an honor.